Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Deep Three podcast. Today, I have the great pleasure of having on Matt Miller from Mount St. Mary's. Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, Vlad?
Doing good. You know, staying safe. So how are you guys doing now? You know, we just talked about this prior to start recording this. You know, just the workouts. That's the main thing right now. You know, you guys being a D1 program. And not be able to be with your kids now, which to me, it's the most important part of the season, right? I mean, for a lot of guys, you know, it's time to get stronger, to get better. How do you guys deal with that right now?
Well, I think we're lucky. We've got a great strength staff that's creative. You know, and I think they're trying to give them ideas that are body weight friendly. And I think the difficult thing is every student athlete has different acronyms. Us right now. I mean, we have an incoming guy from the Czech Republic, you know, he's working out every day and they're open. We got other guys who have access to gyms. We got other guys who are just trying to find an outdoor court to get work in. So I think we have, you know, different levels of what guys are doing and able to do. But our strength staff's been great in terms of just giving ideas and a lot of body weight stuff to keep them active and mobile and, you know, maybe work on some smaller scale things like injury prevention that you can't really get to when you're in full training. And you know, you might shoot some YouTube links like, hey man, here's something to look at, or, you know, try to find some film, you know, something creative, you know, a way to, you know, inspire, maybe a quote here and there just to keep them motivated and positive. But I think we got a lot of mental training going just as well as physical training.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the mental part is huge anyways in basketball, and I think it's a good time. I mean, there's always a positive. You have to look for the positive in the situation. And I think that's one of them right now. You know, the kids can really focus on the mental training. And like you said, you know, especially you guys, cutting videos for them, they can really, you know, just hammer down on what they did wrong or right this season and what worked for them. And, yeah, talking about the kid from the Czech Republic, I mean, you guys were – amazing with that, because I know we talked about him. I shot you a text, I think it was like last fall, and then you guys really hopped on it and like really did a great job recruiting him. How was that process for you guys? Because I know it's not easy for like a Division I coach to kind of see somebody on tape from overseas and like, okay, we like him. I mean, yeah, kid can play, but you know, we're talking about Division I school, you know. The top level of collegiate basketball. So how'd you guys approach that?
Well, I think we got the buy-in from the full staff that, you know what, this kid's pretty good. And you know, we started talking to, you know, with your lead, you know, started talking to, you know, Julian Becko and those guys over at GPA. And they do, you start to learn more about their program and you start to learn that, wow, they do a great job with their kids and they really train. You know, their guys aren't going to need as much time to adjust as they come over because they're training. I mean, they're training at a high level. And, you know, fortunately, we had a break during exams and one guy on staff was very eager, I think, to fly out there and go check them out with his own eyes. I think he had a teething baby at home. And I don't think he had any issues getting out the house for a couple of days to go see a good prospect. And,
I'll go to Czech Republic for one day. It doesn't matter. I'll go.
yeah, exactly. So I think he had a good experience getting out there, recruiting and kind of seeing the background with which they do things. And you know, kind of you see the full body work and then you get to know a kid and like, wow, he's a great student. His English is top notch. But as you said, you get to see with your own eyes. It's a blessing.
That's the main thing, I think. It's just it's so hard because tapes, you know, nowadays tapes they don't tell the whole truth, all these highlights. And we live, I feel like, in a highlight type of culture right now, you know, basketball-wise, where, you know, the highlights can fool you. So I'm really glad you guys, you know, went and saw him live and you liked what you saw. And, you know, I'm really excited to following, you know, his progress with you guys.
So, yeah, Matt, I was going to tell you, we have another young man coming from Georgia. And they actually traveled out to the Czech Republic and they were going to play against each other. The young man in Czech was hurt, but they got to meet each other. I mean, it just, you know, basketball is just such a small world. We thought that was pretty pretty unique and special, you know.
That is crazy. That's awesome, though. That's
a yeah.
Cool right there. Okay, so you guys are going international. Pretty heavy. So, Matt, you have experience, I mean, at all the levels, you know, playing at, you know, St. Mary's and coaching. You coach at Marymount, right, at Shepherd. You coach at Maria Goretti, right, high school. And now you're at the Mount. Can we talk about the differences between the levels in the NCAA? Because most of my listeners are from Europe, right? So that's something I've done with every coach, is kind of try to bring in the differences from their perspective, you know, and their own values, I would say. The difference between like the D1, D2, D3 levels, and then high school, because sometimes high school, it's kind of like overlooked, you know, because there's so many, I like to call them like fandom schools. They just kind of just disappear. They show up 1-2 years and then they disappear, and they take this money from the foreign kids. And it's just a bad rep for like this high school prep area where, and it's gotten that over the last 10 years, I think, because it wasn't like that before. It wasn't like that when I came over. So I just want to talk to you about, you know, the difference between, let's say, the private high school, right, like a Goretti type high school, and then one like a prep type school where, you know, I think it's a huge difference. And I think people need to really understand that. And you being the head coach there for like 4 years, I think, you know, you have a great experience with it.
Yeah, actually, when I was at Shepherd University, the D2 I coached at in West Virginia, I started to become more and more familiar with St. Maria Goretti, and, you know, only being 30 minutes away. And I think I started to get drawn to it because they had guys like Martin Gebben, who ended up playing at Notre Dame, you know, from Lithuania. And, you know, I got to know the AD and one of my former coaches, Kevin Robinson, is an alum. So he kind of talked to me about St. Maria Goretti. And it was very interesting because, you know, it's a Catholic school. It's an hour and a half from Baltimore, but plays in the Baltimore Catholic League. You know, it's not a prep situation where you're taking fifth year kids, but it's a high quality school, good education, but they were willing to let us go recruit internationally. You know, just, you know, the landscape, they needed to be able to bring in a little bit more talent into the area because they weren't directly in the city. And they were wide open to it. They had host families that were excited about doing it. And I think that really drew me to the school because they were trying to be creative. They weren't trying to bring in too many kids, but they were trying to bring in the right kid, the right fit. And I think they hit a home run with Martin Gebben. I mean, not everybody's going to be a 6'9" beast who's the best kid ever and a 4.0 student. And, you know, but I think that experience with Martin really grew that, and we were able to bring in other great international guys like Elijah Clarence from Sweden. We had a great experience with Shemek Golik from Poland. We had a great experience with Abdou Timbala from Cameroon. And they're just various guys that have done really well there. And there are others that I haven't named. But I just think that experience of working in a high quality school where basketball is ingrained in the fabric, it makes sense. And I think there are a lot of prep schools that do wonderful jobs, but yes, as you said, you know, there can be some pop-ups here and there. And I think, you know, you really got to have relationships with the coach and the program and kind of see them, you know, so you know what's going on, you know. I love and respect a lot of the prep programs that are out there. I just think the biggest thing is just doing your research because, yeah, there's the old Catholic school tradition, you know, at a lot of schools and basketball is ingrained. And you know, some of them will do work with international guys and some don't. I really enjoyed that experience. I thought we didn't lose touch of what the school was, you know, basketball was an extension of it. But we it wasn't just, hey, this is just a pop-up basketball school. That wasn't what we were. And I personally just really enjoyed that, having taught and coached in high school for many years, in the public school as well. I just had a good experience with that. And I think it's been great because I've got to know a lot of people internationally just by having that opportunity.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said about the Catholic schools, and you know, my favorite part about St. John's, and you know, even my first year when I got there, I was living like 2 hours away from school, right? It's just because we couldn't find a host family, so I was traveling like 4 hours a day just to go to school. But everybody was so friendly, and there was a culture about it, right? And I think that was my favorite part about going to, I would say, a regular high school, not a prep type school, right? Where there was the tradition, right? There was, you were in this conference with DeMatha, with Paul VI, Gonzaga. There was these rivalries that was like years back. And you see this alumni coming back to games. And it was just a different feeling. Like you just became part of a big, big culture. And that was my favorite part about it. You know, on top of the fact that it really allows you to really go to school. I mean, if you really want to go to school, you know, it's a really great opportunity to get a very good education. So to me, it was just the best of both worlds. And to me, it still is. I know there's a lot of good basketball programs out there. But especially WCAC is still one of my favorites to watch. And I mean, it's hard to compete there. And you guys are in the area. I mean, you recruit and scout there every year. So you definitely know the level and know what I'm talking about. So, Matt, now let's get back to the Mount. You guys are doing a fantastic job of, I would say, rebuilding the program, but you guys just took over fairly recent. So what's your philosophy right now as far as, you know, just – trying to get your own guys, because it's a change of culture. I haven't been through it at a college level as a player, but I've had friends that have been through it, you know, a coaching change. So as a coaching staff, what's your philosophy, for example, for the guys that were not recruited by you, because you basically have to re-recruit them when you come, you know, into the program when you guys came in a few years ago. What was your philosophy back then?
Yeah, I think starting off was definitely a challenge. There are a lot of changes very, very quickly for the staff, incoming, outgoing, and you know, incoming, outgoing players. And so I think one of the biggest things is we just kind of harp on relationships, and you can't put enough time in with a guy. You can never spend enough time in the gym or in the office or at a meal. Just trying to get to know them. And I think that's that time invested. You really find out if the young man is going to give you a chance. And I think it's a two-way street. And I think, you know, you have to try to do your best as a staff to really reach out and, you know, not only just try to coach them, but get to know them so they, you know, give you the opportunity to coach them. And I think with time, you start to figure out, you know, are they bought in, you know, to what you're doing, what you're selling, what you're offering. But I think you can never offer enough time. I think that's one thing we try to do is give as much time, and you know, we love when the players take initiative and reach out to us, but you know, we definitely have had to bridge that gap to build those relationships. And you know, we got some very high quality returners that have you know, stuck with us, that are locked in, that are bought in, and I think they're just great program guys that really are going to help us bring in even more, you know, high quality student athletes that want to be there, just because they're setting that tone, setting that mold. And I think it does take a couple years to get on the same page as to what expectations are and, you know, what our culture is and what we want it to look like. And I think they, you know, they've done a great job in terms of us being able to bring in an exciting class for this coming year. I mean, because our guys that are here, they want to win. They want to be good, and they know that they can do it. But they know that it takes a full team. You know, it doesn't take just a couple overachieving guys. It takes a collective group locked into each other. And I think that's what's been really cool to see, and that's what's really evolved, is that the, you know, the kids, I mean, they're, you know, if there's somebody on campus, they want to meet them and they're excited about them. And they're like, you know, they'll ask us, coach, we really want this guy, you know, like, yeah, we think he could really help. What do you think? And, you know, they have buy-in now, I really think, in terms of our process and understanding that we're going to give them, you know, our full effort every single night. And, you know, so as you said, you know, it takes time. It takes time to bridge that gap and, you know, and build, but I, you know, we feel really good about, you know, the group that we have and stuck with us. And, you know, we have an opportunity to really grow in the next couple of years. And You just got to get back to school.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's you know, especially I think for, you know, a program like UNC right now or Duke, where the same coach has been there for so many years, it's actually an easier time right now. But for you guys, you know, I think when you're still building that culture, you know, you're still building everything up, and especially you guys have a young core, you know, you have younger guys, right? You didn't have any seniors this year, right? If I'm not mistaken, or
a one.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So you have a lot of younger guys. So it's like, you want to have them. You want to be next to them. Like you said, you want to build that relationship, and it's just such a hard time right now. But I think you guys are doing a fantastic job with what you have right now. How, as far as, you know, X's and O's, practices, how is that transition? Or how do you, as a new staff coming onto a program, what was your approach to that? Because, you know, every coach has their own philosophy. Every coach has their own offensive and defensive schemes they like and they want to try. But again, not all of these players were yours. So they don't always fit, you know, your coaching mentality, let's say that way. So what was your guys' approach as far as, you know, just going in with just X's and O's, you know, the defensive and offensive schemes?
Yeah, I think there are a few things. I think one, it's important to teach what you're comfortable teaching. And I think, you know, a lot of our staff, you know, our head coach really wants to play fast. He wants to, you know, he's really pressed and pushed the basketball in the past. But we've had to adapt. We've had to adapt because we just haven't had the depth in order to play the style that he really wants to. You know, and I think we have a high level comfort with teaching and executing and ball screens. And, you know, we have a very high ball screen usage, and that's a big part of what we do. You know, and I think also that lends to us being able to guard them on the other end. You know, so I think we focus a lot on our ball screen defense. We focus a lot on our ball screen offense. And, you know, we've talked a lot about playing with pace, and but we have to study. We've had to study our own skill sets. Like, and that's not just on the offensive end. I kind of function as our defensive coordinator. So I'm trying to study our defensive skill sets to figure out how we can fit, you know, what can you switch? How can you guard certain actions with certain guys? And, you know, we haven't been the biggest at the guard, you know, the last couple of years. So we've had to figure out how to use that to our advantage, you know, not a disadvantage. Like, what, you know, what can we scheme? What can we generate to support the guys that our head coach wants on the floor? And I think that's part of this, figuring out who's going to play the minutes, how many, and then adapting our schemes and our rotations and our plans for that. So I think we've had to do a lot of adjusting. It wasn't just, all right, come on in. We're pressing, we're pushing, you know, it sounds fun, but I think at the same time, you got to give your guys the best chance to be successful. And I think in time, as we recruit the depth and, you know, keep growing, we're going to be able to, you know, play more of the way our head coach envisions. But I think we've really had to adapt and study our guys in terms of their skill set, what works, and how we can tweak things to make them successful. You know, and part of that's in our own skill development, you know, spend a lot of time on, you know, how do we, what do we need to develop so we can play the way we want to? You know, so I think there's some give and take. How much do you adapt your players? How much do you develop your players to that, to how you want to play?
That's great right there. That's a good one. And I like what you said earlier, that you guys are, you know, just adapting, that you do want to play a certain style, but you acknowledge that it's going to take time, you know, to get the guys that can play like that, you know, for the full length of the game or that fit that certain style. And I think in Europe, what you see a lot in the pro game, and part of why I'm so biased to college is actually my favorite thing to watch. College and just women's basketball for some reason. But in the pros, you know, you get these coaches and they just they want to turn things around quick. You get owners that are not very patient with coaches, and you get like 1 year, oh, you got to win the title now because I put so much money into it. And it's such a things like, okay, now I just gave you this great salary budget and you got these good players. And it happened to me in Turkey when we had a big budget, great money, you know, great players on paper. You know, we have Irving Walker, you know, the point guard of Florida. We have Bracey Wright, you know, and we had Diamond Simpson who went to St. Mary's, right? And it was me, it was two other foreigners. We had some good Turkish players. But it was just, it was like one of those expectations where they took us and they're like, okay, go play. You know, and we just didn't fit the coach's style. And I was like, it's just crazy to me. And recruiting is such a big part in creating a team and recruiting what you need, you know, and building the culture from ground up instead of just kind of just plug stuff in. And, you know, I mean, we do live in an area, in an era of transfers now, right? I mean, there's so many kids that want to transfer. And, you know, there's a coaching change, boom, transfer. There's, I'm not happy, I transfer. And I transferred, but for different reasons. You know, I just didn't think I was fitting the style of play at Mason. I just couldn't see myself develop the way I wanted to develop to become a professional basketball player. So that was the reason behind my transferring. But now it's just, you have to be patient with a coaching change and you have to build from the ground up like you guys are doing. And I really love that you took that approach where it's like, okay, it's not a one-year process where you build a program, right? It's not a two-year process. Actually, you know, really, your first recruiting class, it comes in as, well, they're going to be freshmen. So it takes about 3 years until they can really develop and be, you know, because we're not talking about Duke's, Kentucky's where you get, you know, NBA guys, they're like, okay, they can come in as freshmen and for sure they're going to give you 20. It's like, oh, 20 and 10, easy, you know. And it's such a hard job, I think. And I have a lot of respect for all college coaches because of that. And how do you guys approach recruiting when you came in?
Say that one more time.
How did you guys approach the recruiting, you know, everything recruiting, scouting? How did you guys approach that when you just came on staff?
Yeah, we'll just kind of elaborate what you were talking about before. I think our head coach has really talked about making things sustainable, you know, not trying to just find an immediate fix because we want to get it to the point where it's stable, sound. You know, we're bringing in, as you said, exactly what you need, and not just, you know, overloading, you know, a whole roster and overhauling the whole thing. But I think that's, you know, we've had to really give guys an opportunity, you know, see where they fit, and then figure out our biggest need. I think that's what we're doing, and you know, we've been trying to bring in freshmen. And if we, you know, we are bringing in two transfers this year, I think we had an opportunity to get some guys that we think that we could not get in a freshman class, you know, in terms of position and versatility, size, et cetera. So, you know, just something to add that we would have for a couple years, talented guys that fit our culture and are great kids, top-notch kids that our staff is very comfortable with. And I think our players are very comfortable with as kids. So I think if we look at a transfer, we really do like to check the character box. Because, you know, when you talk to your kids about building culture and doing it with freshmen and growing them. And if you bring in a transfer that doesn't fit that, it's kind of a slap in their face, you know, and I think that's one thing that we've learned is making sure we really want to bring in, you know, quality character guys if they're going to be transfers. You know, freshmen, you know, obviously we want guys that are hard workers, that are talented and all of that, but at the same time, like, you know, they've got a little bit room for maturation and you got to, now we can start to actually lean on our upperclassmen to mold the young guys. And we didn't have that benefit before without having upperclassmen. So we want to evaluate the most freshmen, incoming freshmen that we can. And, you know, and I think we were very fortunate that we're bringing in four good ones this year. And you know, once in a while, you're not going to get them. And, you know, as you said, there is a transfer culture and there's a chance that could be available in a couple of years, you know, so we want to develop quality relationships with the young kids in high schools and prep schools. You know, and if they don't come the first time, I mean, you know, we don't want to burn any bridges because there are a lot of talented players out there, and you know, we want to be able to strike when we have an opportunity. But I was saying before, I think we've got student athletes that are really bought in right now that are excited to see us at a talented young man. You know, they don't look at it as competition. They look at it as addition. And I think that's part of it, is really trying to get your players buy-in. You know, if you have a kid on an official visit and you don't feel you could bring a young man from your current team to that dinner, that's probably a problem. You know, it doesn't mean that they're locked in and bought in, you know, and I think right now we really feel that anybody in our program, we could bring regardless of position to dinner with the staff and with somebody that's on an official visit, and, you know, be like, hey, we'd love for you to, you know, see what you think. What do you think of this young man? Do you think he fits what we do? I think we're developing that trust. And I think that's what's so important to us. And, you know, currently we're trying to evaluate a lot of guys on film. We didn't get to do so in April. And, you know, we're hoping there's going to be an AAU season, but, you know, a lot of our evaluations have been on guys in their junior year or their sophomore year or, you know, previous AAU or film, as you said, highlights, and highlights can be misleading. I think they're indicators, but you can't just go off a highlight, you know? So film has been a really good tool for us and a lot of free time to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your approach actually right now that, since you brought it up, you know, for the next year's class, because I'm assuming if you don't have kids signed, then I'm assuming it has to cross your mind. It's like, hey, do we want to just keep our scholarships or do we want to offer somebody that we haven't seen live? It's really a tough time, honestly, for a coach. You know, it's like, do I sign up for 4 years with a guy that I've only seen on tape? It's not easy. So what's your guys' approach? Of course, hopefully there is a season in the summer. And there is some kind of live contact where you can watch somebody live, but otherwise, what's your approach?
I think you know, you start with previous evaluations. I mean, you know, we've been fortunate enough to been around for a couple of years, and I personally, it helped me a lot having been a high school coach for so long. So I knew some of these guys when they were younger, had a feel for them. So you have some sort of concept of a kid. Obviously, you want to see where they grow, but, you know, previous evals, I think, highlights, just to get indication of, you know, what their upside is or what they look like on a really good day. And then, you know, starting to watch two or three game films. And from there, you know, you can get a gauge for, all right, you know what, this kid's getting better. He's better when I saw him last year. And then Zoom calls and conversations. From there, I think you can really get a feel for a young man and his family and, you know, just really spending our time doing research on their background. Are they workers? Are they high character kids? You know, what do their transcripts look like? You know, are they interested in getting better? You know, what are their goals? And I think we're able to do more character and, you know, hard work checks and, you know, talking to different people to get the full story on a young man, you know, and to see if it's a fit. Cause I think figuring out if a guy is good enough is, that's probably, I don't want to say the easy part, but I think, you know, finding out if he's good, that's very important. I think figuring out if he's a fit, you know, you can figure that out a little bit more with conversations and talking to people and building that relationship, then just watch him play, you know. So I think we have to do that. And obviously some guys are no-brainers, you know, other we may request more film on, or, you know, or decide that, you know what, we need to see him play live. You know, we haven't, you know, he's from way out of state. We haven't been able to see him live before. We really like what's going on. Let's keep building this relationship. We got to see him live before we can, you know, move forward. And I think everybody's going to have a different philosophy on that. I do think our head coach really likes seeing guys live. I mean, I think it's easy for me. I can recommend guys all day, but he's going to have to make decisions. And that's the hard part. I think it's easy to come up with a lot of options right now. It's really, really challenging to rank and make decisions just because you can't see him live.
Yeah, and I think live shows you, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes, you know, body language, right? I mean, you miss and make a shot, what's the body language after? You know, you have a turnover, what's your body language? It's the little stuff that you can't really see on tape, even if you watch a full game. You know, you can't really see that you know, he might just make like some funny faces when he misses a shot, or it's the little stuff that can tell you, hey, like, just missing shots really bothers him. Like, I mean, and you're recruiting a shooter, right? And then it becomes like, you know, the mental game, you said, you know, so I think it's crucial to see players live and, you know, try to get the best feel possible for them. And of course, like you said, the fit, you know, and we briefly talked about this, and you know, just the fit is huge. You can be a good player, go to a small program, like the D1 program, is still not work out, or you can be, you know, it's really important to find the right fit. And you know, you have to check all the boxes, you know, like you said, to find the right guys for yourself. So what's your approach usually, not this year, but as far as like individual training and the skill work you guys do, since you do have a specific style of play you want to play, what do you guys do with the kids to, you know, to get them there, to get them accustomed to what you need them to do?
I mean, we kind of break it down. It depends on the type of year. What time of year it is. In the spring is going to be a little different than the summer. Summer is going to be a little different from the fall. Fall different from the season. To keep it fresh. But, I mean, we try to get individuals where we have the entire staff on the court with them, you know, spending 30, you know, 40 minutes on the clock, and just working with that one individual and building them up and really pushing them. And it's challenging. I think those are really tough workouts. But I think they're motivating, you know, and I think it allows the young man to realize, like, all right, oof, I'm good here, but I need to get better here, because there's nothing, you know, there's no reps off, you know. When you're one on the whole staff, there's no reps off. And I mean, it's fast paced, and we try to make it game like, and, you know, make those shots game shots. You know, we'll also do some small group stuff where we're working in groups of three or four, so we can work on, you know, whether it's position specific or where it's like, all right, let's get a four or five and a guard, so we can work on roll replace action, or, you know, let's get a forward, you know, a wing and a guard, so we can work on shooting out of our offense, lifting up from the corner, you know, making reads, you know, and then you get the whole staff working with maybe three or four guys at a time. So you're working on components of our offense, and getting our small group work out of there. And then, you know, we'll do some team stuff too, where we get the whole group. And, you know, because at the end of the day, you can work with just your point guards on making pocket passes, but who do they have to pass to? They got to pass the big. So you got to develop that chemistry. They can't just pass to coach over and over again. And the bigs can't just catch from coach. They got to be able to feed each other, hit each other, develop that chemistry, and understand when to lob it, when to drop it, you know, where to make your reads. And I don't think you develop that by simply just having individuals. You know, so we have some variety in what we do, and we have different guys that love getting extra shots up, you know, pre-practice, post-practice, and just getting going, and that have quality routines. But we try to weave it into the fabric of what we do. I mean, if we're in practice working on our offense, we're trying to add a component where we're shooting out of it as well, where everybody gets a shot, you know, or, you know, we're working on this ball screen read, the team ices. We're gonna use that. We're gonna have a, you know, maybe you're making the skip, coach is hitting the roll. Then maybe one time you're hitting the roll, coach hits the skip. So we're just trying to get them to envision it and just shoot game shots. You know, it's one thing to catch and shoot where your rebounder's under the basket. How many times do you get a pass from underneath the bucket in the game? You know, I mean, I think that's important. You know, you gotta be able to shoot off the skip, off the reversal from both sides, inside out, driving pitch. You know, so we try to provide, you know, game shot opportunities, you know, from the angles where you're going to catch it. You're not going to get it teed up, throwing it inside out every single time. So we just have that, you know, because you get limited time. And so I think it's important that we incorporate what our offense is into the skill set. You know, we're not just doing, you know, just standard ball handling drills. You know, they're going to apply to what we need them to be able to do, you know. Passing the same, shooting the same, you know, how we seal in the post. We're not just working on post moves. We're working on how we seal from within the offense so they can see it too, you know. And then we film. I mean, we film our practices, and then we'll cut them up, and you know, guys might come in and ask to watch, you know, what you know, what their clips look like in practice, where they can improve, what they did well. So I think that's one tool we use. You know, we talked about the mental side. Yeah. I think that film work, I mean, it's just so key. And it's really nice that, you know, the Mount is invested in that film equipment, you know, in our practice facility, so we can just go to it every single day. I've actually been going back through our practices to figure out where we can improve our drill work, where we can, how we can make it more competitive, make it more live, just areas where we can make our own stuff better. You know, it's really nice to be able to hit two buttons and I can pull a practice from December 6th. It's
nice to have all that.
Yeah, no, it's quality stuff.
Yeah. But you were saying about how tough the individuals are. But to me, that was like, and it still is, my favorite part, where actually you get better and you get some stuff that you didn't get before, right? So let's say we go into a workout and I'm not really good at, I don't know, a step back jumper, right? And you just feel it, right? When you have four coaches around you and you just get tired and, you know, they keep pushing you. But then at one point it's going to click, right? And you get that move or you get that technique that they're talking about, a ceiling type technique or a screening or whatever it is. And to me, that's the most rewarding part in basketball. I mean, if, I don't know, for a coaching standpoint, maybe it's, you know, it can be winning or losing or whatever it is. Or maybe for some players, it's just the game. And to me, the game is just a part of it. I love the part where I don't know something and I go into that summer and I'm like, okay, I want to develop this. And that's just, I hammer down. I'm like, a month and I'm like, you know what, let's go play King of the Court, let's see if I got it. And that, to me, that's the favorite part about basketball this day. It's just, I'm so excited about the summers. I usually ask my coaches for like my synergy, you know, files. I'm like, hey, can you send me my synergy file? Cool. I just take a look at it and I'm like, man, it was like 4 or 5 years ago and I drove left like 85% of the time. I just looked at it like, no, that's not possible. And then like my coach was like, nah, you drive left, like you're going left. Like, if you shot fake, you're going left, like it's over. And I was like, really? I was like, all right. So I just got in the gym that whole summer and I was like, just and I also looked at tapes from like even college and I was like, why am I going left? I used to go right in college. But then I figured out that, like, you know, that direct step in Europe instead of cross step, it's usually called a travel if you don't put the ball down. And I remember I was like, oh yeah, I got called in Italy, I got so many travels that first year, my rookie year. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's when I think I got, like, you know, mentally I was like, I'm not going that way anymore because of travel, because I always step in left, right into my shot. Mm-hmm. It's just something that I got taught at, I think it was American. I was like, Coach Jones was like, you know, just find a way that you get in the shot the same way, you know, the same time, same routine. So I was stepping left, right. So my left and my pivot, and I thought, if I go right, it's just going to be a direct step, you know? And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And it was about 2 years ago. And I just started like, okay, let me try to pull the ball down a little bit. Yeah. Faster. Let me work on this. And it's changed a little bit last 2 years. But to me, that's the most rewarding part as a basketball player. And I think as a coach too, right? I mean, individual workout, you're trying to teach some guys. And then once they get it, I feel like it's a really good feeling for you guys, isn't it?
Oh, it's the best. And, you know, especially as an assistant coach, I mean, you spend so much time getting reps. I remember one game this year. After we'd been extensively working on 2-foot finishes, I mean, and playing off two to be able to make the pitch play, the dump down, whatever. I think one of our guys, I forget which game it was, he hop steps, plays off two, finishes, and he's so excited about it. He turns to the bench, points at me and starts yelling, "That's Coach Matt finishing!" As he's running back on D. I think I'm yelling back at him, "Get back!" But it makes it fun, you know, and I think, you know, when guys, if you're working on pick and pop shooting, you know, and a lot of forwards come in, you know, some guys are just shooters, but some have to develop that. And it's such a needed skill as you advance beyond college, as you know, as a forward. But, you know, once they start, you know, they hit some game ones, you know, you feel it in your chest that you're excited, you know, because you know, you spend a lot of time with them and you want to see them have the success. And, you know, if our players succeed, we all succeed. And I think you take pride in a guy's individual development and you try not to to be biased because you want, you know, you want your head coach making the best decisions for what's good for the team. But I think everybody does take pride when you know, guys you're working with are doing well and, you know, making those advances. But I'll never forget that, you know, pointing at me you know, in the middle of a Division I game, you know.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he developed relationship with coaches on the staff that, you know, at American, I had a great relationship with Lamar Barrett, and, you know, he's still one of my favorite guys, and we talk, and we just developed that relationship as far as maybe it was just the coach that I just felt most comfortable working out with. And, you know, as soon as I graduated, I was like, hey, can you help me work out? And he worked me out the whole summer, basically, going to my first pro year. He got me ready for my NBA workouts. So, you know, like on the individual side, for you as a coach, right? And you just create different relationship with different kids. And some of them last a lifetime, you know, and it's going to be fun to watch them grow. You know, some might turn professional basketball players, you know, some might just be really successful in the, I don't know, IT or business, you know, whatever it is. And it's just such a different type of success, I think, than, you know, the usual coaching stress. Because to me, college coaching is a lot of stress, isn't it?
It has its moments for sure.
Yeah. Now for the last part, what I want to talk to you about is, let's talk about the differences that you've noticed between, you know, you were at Marymount, right? You were at Shepherd, and now you're at Mount St. Mary's. What are some of the differences between the levels? And not necessarily playing-wise, because I've touched on that a few times. I try to say it all the time. You know, the Division II level is not a walk in the park. The D3 level has its own perks and has its own pros and cons, of course. And there's still very good players there too, same as NAIA and JUCO. So I'm a fan of all college basketball players in general because they've worked their butts off to get there. And they're good players, no matter the level. But just overall, you know, as far as like maybe infrastructure or the way you travel or, you know, like you said, probably your practice facility and your cameras in it, you know, stuff like that. What are the biggest differences that you've seen and you felt, you know, as a coach between those three divisions, you know, at the NCAA level?
Well, I think I'll just touch on the personnel real quick. I think in D3, I think you had guys that run their stuff the best. I mean, and their coaches, they just, you don't get the whole off season to work with them, but they run their stuff like clockwork, and it's pretty incredible what they do with what they have. And I think at the D2 level, when I was coaching there, I felt like everybody could score. I didn't think there was anybody in the gym who couldn't score. How did he make that? And you know, there's some crazy styles, I think, where people are playing really, really fast. And trying to force the possessions way up. But I mean, the scores were just, they were mind boggling for me, you know, being a guy that's more defensive oriented. I was like, man, everybody can score in a different way. You know, it was amazing. I think the first scrimmage I coached at Shepherd, I think the score was like 105-95 or 105-101. I'm going nuts, you know, and that was unique. And I think at Division I, you have a lot of talented guys, and sometimes, you know, you take young guys that have upside that have to develop and are going to take time, but you know it could pay off. And so I think there's, you know, it depends what you need, you know, at each level. But that was just kind of my impression, is that, you know, obviously Division I players are Division I players, but, you know, D2 and three, the style's a little different, but you got a lot of good players. And I think the biggest thing with D3 is, you know, just remembering, you know, busing the day of every single day. You know, you have to figure out your gym time around the kids' academic schedules, because that's going to come first. So you might be practicing at 7 or 6 a.m. You might be practicing late at night, and maybe you're fortunate where you can go in the early afternoon because you have a break. But, you know, I think, you know, academics are priority, and you're not going to miss school for games very often. I mean, you're going to have to be able to hop off a bus and play. You know, you're not getting a hotel the night before and going out there, you know. So I think that, you know, so you got some tough kids. I mean, they get off the bus and they got to hop out and play and be ready to go. I think there says something about that in terms of blue collar, grit. You know, I think at D2, there's a little bit more funds. You got some guys that are partial scholarships. You have some that are fully funded with 10 scholarships. So I think you have a wave of, you know, how many kids are, you know, just out there because they didn't want to play D3 or their transfers from D1, or hey, they have a full scholarship or you don't. I mean, it's interesting how you put your programs together there, because you have to be creative. And, you know, I remember being at Shepherd, we're going down the day before, and that was a big deal because, I mean, they're long rides. I mean, I'll tell you, with the D2 driving, I mean, some of those bus rides were 5, 6, 7 hours. And imagine hopping off the bus plane the day of. You know, we didn't do that. But I think that there was a lot of travel, and you're not riding on planes, you know, but you're staying in decent hotels and traveling, and, you know, it's a little, you know, upgraded experience. And I think there's some really good teams, you know, in that conference. When I was there, I think that year we finished 20-10, had a really good team, but, you know, there are all types of teams like Fairmont State and, you know, West Liberty that were top 10 in the country, you know, and Wheeling Jesuit was very, very good then as well. And you know, in Division 1, obviously we're going to fly more, you know, we're going to really stay in nice places, catered meals. I think the amenities are way nicer. You know, and I think you really have to teach, you know, appreciation. You know, you don't want to take that stuff for granted. Is you know, we want to appreciate everybody that helps us out, whether a donor, whether, you know, it's the athletic budget, whether it's the hotel, whether it's the, you know, the people that we're flying with, or, you know, making us our meals, you know, our bus drivers when we're traveling. But we're definitely up there a day or two in advance, and, you know, it's a different schedule. I mean, you have to really focus on the academics on the road, because you're going to be on the road. I mean, we played at the University of Washington this past year. We played at Kentucky. We played at UAB. Year before, we played at St. John's and NC State, Hofstra, among others. And, you know, so there's more travel, and there's more emphasis on being on the road. And just having a plan and structure for that, I think, is really important, because you could lose sight of the fact, you know, if you're playing Thursday, Saturday, even in conference play, we're playing Thursday, Saturday, we're hitting the road on Wednesday. Well, that's multiple days you're not in school. And I think that's, you know, that can get lost sometimes. And I think, you know, you can get to some very high level schools, you know, people are chartering, they're able to get back to campus really quickly. But I think in our situation, you know, in a lot of Division 1 schools, you have to be do a good job with your guys on the road. Like, are you still getting individual work? Are you still getting strength training? Are you still, how are you developing your walk-ons and your redshirt guys, or the guys that maybe aren't getting as much playing time or in the rotation yet, you know, when you're spending all this time on the road? So I think it's just kind of a different beast. But, you know, the coolest part for me about Division 1 is that, you know, you can have spring, summer, and fall workouts. And that actually was one of the things I really liked about coaching at St. Maria Goretti, was we could work out year round. And I think, you know, we weren't limited in that regard. And I think that's what I've enjoyed the most about Division 1 and, you know, high level high school, is when you can really work with your guys. Cause you and I were talking about, that's the fun part, you know, getting in the gym with the guys, you know, and D2, you have hours, but you have limited hours, and there's no summer school with that. And I think, you know, that's what we're missing right now, is we're dying to get back to summer school, you know, hoping it happens, because that's where we do our best work with the guys, and we really get a chance to get to know them. And D3, you know, they don't have that ability to work with them. So I think that's, you know, for me, probably one of the drawbacks of D3.
Got you. Yeah, for me, the strength and conditioning in the summertime was probably the best. That's really when you can hammer down. You know, you have maybe 1-2 classes. You don't have that much time spent in the classroom. So, you know, I was there at 6 a.m. just lifting weights. You know, then I could get back in the gym around lunchtime to get some shots up. Then they get a workout in the afternoon, you know. So it was just the easiest way to, you know, to get better. To me, that was it. That was summertime. And, yeah, hopefully you guys get that. Now, for last thing, what are some of the biggest differences that you think you've seen from, you know, a D1 player and a D2 player? Because I've seen some very talented guys. And I know sometimes, like you said, maybe it's just a character thing. Maybe it's just a fit thing where, you know, I'm I'm like a really good player, but I have like only three D1 schools looking at me, and then it just doesn't work out. But I go end up, you know, going killing at D2 level. So to you, what do you see as the biggest differential between, you know, a D1 kid and a D2 kid?
Well, I think there's some that are just blatantly obvious. You know, there's some where you could say, you know, like that kid, yeah, he's just a big time player. I think, you know, in the middle and in the fringes, you know, like I think it's really
the line right there, that thin line of it.
It's really difficult. I think you see that's why there's a lot of guys that transfer from Division 1 to Division 2. And even nowadays, from Division 2 to Division 1,
yeah.
I mean, so you're seeing it both ways, because I think guys that really produce early in their careers, you know, maybe they weren't producing at that level in high school. They were pretty close, but then they really showed it early on in college, and they decide, hey, I want to go Division 1. That happens, and you know, there's some guys that, you know, they may have gotten projected to develop into something. Well, if you don't develop into that guy, you know, I think some people get antsy and they want to play. I mean, what young man do we know that has fun not playing? And I think that's, sure. You know, you get a couple of years in your career and you haven't played. I think, you know, it loses its fun. It loses its allure. You know, D1 doesn't sound as cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think every kid likes winning. And I think every kid likes playing. And I think that's why it's part of the reason there are definitely transfers, because you only get so many years to be able to experience that or have an opportunity to try to achieve that. And then, so I don't think there is much difference. It could be a little bit of size, a little bit of athleticism. I also think Division 1 coaches, we get only so many evaluation days, you know, in July. And I think Division 2s and 3s get a lot more days to go out and really evaluate. So I think, you know, sometimes when you see a guy and he bangs a few threes and he dunks on people, all of a sudden, you know, there could be a flock of coaches running to him, but that could have been his best day, you know, and he all of a sudden just picked up a bunch of Division 1 offers. And, you know, you might have a guy who's D2, who's been very, very solid, but he hasn't been as flashy, you know, but over time you realize, wow, this kid's really productive. So I think it depends how many evals you actually get. And I think that's the hardest part, because you have to make quick decisions really quickly. So I don't think there is a big difference a lot of times between, you know, really good Division 2 players and Division 1 players. I mean, they're both scholarship level guys, and every case is different, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, well, I just want to thank you for your time. This has been very informative, you know, I think for a lot of my listeners, as far as what it means to, you know, be a D1 coach and even be a D2, D3 coach or high school. And I really want to thank you for your time. I mean, I hope you guys get in the gym soon. And yeah, hopefully we see each other.
No, that's great, man. Thanks for everything. I appreciate you thinking of me. And it's been a good way to spend my morning here.
Thank you, Matt. Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon, Vlad.
Thank you so much.